Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
Hello, my name is Iris Dotan from the Rabin Medical Center in Petah Tikva, Israel. Today, we will discuss the use of antibiotics in inflammatory bowel diseases, their use in specific conditions, some insights that we recently have about their positive as well as their potential negative effects in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases. All of us had used antibiotics in inflammatory bowel diseases. Mostly, it was in patients with Crohn's disease, specifically the ones with septic complications. More rarely, we used antibiotics in patients with ulcerative colitis. And mostly, we use patients in real world in patients with ulcerative colitis that underwent total proctocolectomy with the formation of an ileal pouch. Those patients tend to develop inflammation of the pouch called pouchitis. And this is the most antibiotic-responsive inflammatory bowel disease. The antibiotics that we use most in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases are the fluoroquinolones, or the imidazoles, specifically ciprofloxacin or metronidazole. In the real world, we used antibiotics for the treatment of inflammatory bowel diseases, mainly for Crohn's disease, for several indications. Those would be septic complications, for instance, patients that have perianal disease, patients that have, of course, intra-abdominal abscesses, but also for the treatment of post-operative patients with Crohn's disease, trying to prevent disease recurrence. Those patients would typically receive imidazole antibiotics for a period that's between 1 month and 3 months. And actually, this therapy proved to be effective in preventing disease recurrence. However, its side effects and intolerance by patients made it used less often in the treatment of postoperative recurrence of Crohn's disease. To treat septic complications, we may use the fluoroquinolones, specifically ciprofloxacin or in combination with metronidazole. And of course, here we will use antibiotics per indication. So if a patient would be hospitalized, we would use IV antibiotics. However, if a patient is an ambulatory patient, we would use the fluoroquinolones with the imidazoles in combination as an outpatient clinic. However, an interesting question is, how can we use antibiotics, if at all, as specific therapy of inflammatory bowel disease, meaning not to prevent recurrence of Crohn's disease after surgery and not to treat Crohn's disease septic complications? Here, the data are scarce, and we have little support for the routine use of antibiotics in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases, except for their use in pouchitis. Pouchitis, as mentioned, is inflammation developing in the ileal pouch in patients with ulcerative colitis after they underwent total proctocolectomy and pouch surgery. This is the most antibiotic-responsive inflammatory bowel disease. Typically, a patient with acute pouchitis will receive a short course of 2 to 4 weeks of antibiotics, whether monotherapy with a fluoroquinolone, typically ciprofloxacin, with or without the use of metronidazole. Patients have a very high response rate to this course. However, one of the important problems in patients with pouchitis is that they would usually, in the vast majority of cases, require another antibiotic course within the coming months after the first antibiotic therapy. What causes the antibiotic response? And more importantly, why are patients becoming antibiotic dependent, meaning that they will require recurrent courses of antibiotics? Or what makes them chronically taking antibiotics? Those would be the patients with chronic pouchitis or the patients that have Crohn's-like disease of the pouch. Well, of course, the reason for that is still unknown. However, in the recent few years, we have new insights about the use of antibiotics in inflammatory bowel diseases, specifically pouchitis and in Crohn's disease. It was a few years ago that Derek Jivers told us that in patients with Crohn's disease, the use of antibiotics created even more dysbiosis, even more aberration in microbial components compared to patients who were not treated with antibiotics. Our group had shown later on that the use of antibiotics in patients with pouchitis created similar dysbiosis.
However,
the Achilles heel of this strategy,
we further had stopped antibiotics,
that the reason for the beneficial clinical benefit of antibiotics for patients with pouchitis was due to the creation of antibiotic-resistant microbiome that could actually resist the effects of ciprofloxacin and metronidazole. This resistant microbiome had a lower virulence, thus it did not cause harm to the host. The host actually enjoyed using the combination of antibiotics. However, the Achilles heel of this strategy was that when the antibiotic course was stopped, the antibiotic-resistant microbiome became antibiotic-responsive again, and the relative advantage of having this low-virulence microbiome was lost. Thus, patients needed repeated courses of antibiotics in order to exert a similar effect. I hope that this insight and the recent developments in understanding the mechanisms of action of antibiotics in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases, specifically Crohn's disease and patients with pouchitis, will make us use antibiotics in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases in a more knowledgeable way in the coming years. Thus, we can treat our patients more specifically, perhaps using diet, fecal microbial transplantation, specific probiotics, or targeted antibiotics at short courses in order to have beneficial effects of antibiotics in patients with inflammatory bowel diseases without having their resistance and without having the deleterious effects of their use for longer time periods.